Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Like peroxide into a reflecting pool in direct sunlight, so are the days of our lives, Alyssa. And by that, I mean an exercise in futility. So why were they pouring peroxide into the reflecting pool in front of the Washington Monument? Why were they doing it?
You go, you do
it. I'll do it. Okay, because you remember that $14 million pool zhuzh that the president was doing to paint the bottom of it an American flag blue? He just hired the guys who redid his pool at Bedminster, I guess, for this no-bid government contract. $14 million, and it's already covered in algae. But here, this is the kicker. So to fix the algae bloom, federal workers were pouring just gobs of hydrogen peroxide into the pool. Do you know what happens to hydrogen peroxide in UV sunlight and water?
Tell me.
It breaks down into nothing. It literally breaks. It is a chemical reaction. It is like a thing you learn. The UV itself expedites that reaction.
Did you see the aerial of what the pool looks like now? It's like an aura ring because the inside is still green as green can be, but there's like a faint rim of blue around the green. And my favorite is the new meaning of MAGA. Make algae green again.
Make algae green again for sure. Also, you know, it kind of looks like an American mood ring. I just pulled up a picture.
That's what I meant. I said aura. I meant a mood ring.
Yeah, it looks like a mood ring, and the mood is like you're cold.
Very.
Today we round up the latest news from J.D. Vance's embarrassing book tour. Has he learned how to laugh like a normal human man? Stay tuned. We'll find out. Barry Weiss's next fail upwards and the future of the U.S. Postal Service's independence. Then Megan Gailey joins to talk sports news from the UFC to the Knicks and the rise of heteropessimism. Then, of course, Sani Petty. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who wonder if J.D. Vance is the only millennial to ever use the phrase boneheaded. Boneheaded. This is something he's trotting out on his book tour. He wrote a new book called Communion.
Yeah.
Whatever. And it's about, it's a way for him to finesse his like two religious conversions into anything besides just being an opportunist flip-flopper slime ball.
Yep.
But he famously wrote in this book that the time that he said that that America was being taken over by childless cat ladies or Democratic voting base was childless cat ladies was a boneheaded thing for him
boneheaded.
To say. And then he said it out loud on his appearance on The View promoting his book.
He did.
Anyway, Alyssa, tell us more about this book.
I mean, look, this book is just a reminder that JD's Catholicism is younger than the Hysteria podcast.
It is younger than the show, just as J.D. Vance is younger than me, if you can believe that.
Yes, so much younger than me.
But his Catholicism is younger than our podcast, and he is trying to correct the Pope on the reg.
His chore is really just a startling lack of self-awareness.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's never been self-aware, but this one's really, he is out there, Erin. He is tanned. He has been resurfaced. He is toxed. He's Zempiced. But with all this time, has he finally mastered laughing like a normal human being?
Let's find out. Let's find out.
Okay. Good.
Come on. What a goober.
That's my J.D. Vance laughing impression. Also, Rachel, our video person who, you know, does incredible work for Hysteria and this fucking guy, Rachel did an impersonation of J.D. Vance's quiet laughter. She was like, he did a lot of quiet laughing and she did an impression of it and it was so funny. It was like.
Yep. No, because he doesn't have a sense of humor, so he doesn't actually know what's funny.
He doesn't have a sense of humor, and he laughs when he's uncomfortable, which a lot of people do. But if you're going to be an uncomfy laugher, you've got to get your laugh good, right? Like, I think of America's best laughs. Akilah Hughes, one of America's best laughs.
Terrific.
If she laughs when she's uncomfortable, it's like, what a delight. But when J.D. Vance laughs, it's like, what's happening to you? What are you doing?
See, and I don't laugh unless I snort. And then you know, you're like, I really got to listen that time.
Yeah, you do. You are a snort laugher. He was on The View. The View was actually kind of contentious.
It was really interesting. It was like a solid 25, 30 minute long interview, the ladies came loaded with facts and bear. I mean, Anna Navarro knew more about foreign policy than J.D. Vance did.
She did. That was funny. And he was trying to kind of be like, yeah, Anna, like you're the Republican here, you know, trying to kind of cozy up to her, even though Alyssa Farah is also a Republican. She used to work for
Like worked for Pence, and she's tried to like distance herself.
She's more of a Nicole Wallace type, respectfully.
Yeah.
Worked for Republicans, but then was like, actually, I am uncomfy with this.
Maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't trust her. I trust Nicole, but I don't.
But like they held his feet to the fire. Like the thing that I was just referencing with Anna Navarro is she's like, you know, President Trump said that, you know, immigration, that all these countries were releasing rapists into our country. And he's like, well, actually, Anna, she goes, no, actually, that's what Cuba did, however, dozens of years ago. She's like, and that's not what happened in Venezuela. And he was just like, he's like, can we cut to commercial? They all had things to say. They all had things to say.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah was the one who was really, really going in on him, right?
She was, because she really went with the religion and being a Christian and Christian values. Mm-hmm. And like, what do you tell your kids when you hear the president say things like this? She did.
And his answers were kind of dog shit.
Total dog shit.
Like, he clearly was trying to look, he was trying to be a good sport.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was trying to get in front of women and be like, hey, women, check me out. I got a tan now. You know,
he really did have a tan.
I've got a friendly beard. This is a friendly beard. It definitely isn't covering my lack of chin. He seems like he's trying to make inroads with female voters or like the Views audience. And I think he knows that he's not going to skim off that many, but he's got to skim whatever he can skim. And clearly this, you know, he was promoting his book, obviously, but he also was attempting to reach out to a segment of the population that finds him fucking repugnant.
Repellent.
Yeah, repugnant, yeah. Repellent, all the reps. He's a Republican, repellent, repugnant. But I just thought that if that was his goal, I don't know that he accomplished that. What do you think, Alyssa?
I think if the bar was really low, like he cleared a low bar.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think that he came on, here's what he was yesterday. He was not combative, mm-hmm. and he was affable, right? Like, so I think that, it was with the horrible laughing.
Yeah.
So I don't think he did a good job. I would say he was less, like, menacing than usual.
Yeah, well, because he knew that the
menace— In presentation,
yeah. I think the menacing act would especially not work at The View, though. I'm curious—
Well, right, no, I agree.
I'm curious what he's going to do when he's on a Manosphere-adjacent podcast or a Republican Gadfly podcast, and they ask him about his appearance on The View. Because I feel like, you know—
I agree, yes.
It's like an everybody play the tough guy till shit pop off type situation. Like he's not in front of the people that are actually mad at him and going to yell at him, he's going to be like, oh, yeah, these women
Listen, guys, I just had to calm the bitches down.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But the thing was, I thought the hosts of The View did a remarkably good job.
Superb.
None of them lost their composure. I think that, like, you know, like I mentioned Rachel earlier, and Rachel was like, I just can't stand him. And I feel like a lot of women feel like that when they're watching J.D.
Joy Behar.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for
Whoopi.
It's hard for me to watch him because he just comes across as so, like, fake and contrived to me.
Yeah.
And slimy and like, striving. And he really thinks he's slick. And he is, because he has pulled one over on a lot of people, but not me, and not the host of The View. So it's difficult to watch him. And I can't imagine what it would be like to sit next to him. And I applaud the host of The View for not losing their shit.
Totally. Well, and having a conversation, look, they have now gotten him to say things to which he'll be held to account for, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he went on The View to be like, childless cat ladies, girls, my bad. And I give it, we should take it to the markets. I give it 48 hours before he backtracks on that.
Yeah, he's going to come up with a new slur for women who didn't get married, most of whom are probably just doing whatever they want all the time and having a great enjoying their personal life, enjoying their free time. Like,
live the best lives.
Oh, I miss having a cat. I can't wait to be a cat lady again.
Oh, if your only. Time will come soon.
My
I
time will
it.
Come. The right cat will come. I'm just waiting for the right one.
They do choose you.
They do choose you. Okay, so here's another thing about J.D. Vance's book, which he's promoting. It's kind of rare for vice presidents to publish books while in office.
Yes.
According to expert Joel Goldstein, the last VP to do so was George H.W. Bush. Is J.D.'s book publishing while VP comparable to George H.W. Bush's? Do they have the same business?
Let's see, Aaron. When George H.W. Bush became vice president, he had already been director of the CIA, U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, RNC chair, and he also led the mission in China before we had established formal diplomatic relations with China. So I would just say George H.W. Bush had a lot more to stand on. This is just J.D. reinventing himself one more time. That's it.
And using religion as a way to
which is so gross.
Which is, I don't know, man. I'm not Catholic anymore, but I was Catholic. You know, people who listen to the show know I was raised Catholic. I went to a Catholic university. I was practicing until I was in my mid-20s. Then I stopped practicing, so I'm really bad at it now. But I feel like anybody who is like a cradle Catholic like me just kind of follows along with Catholic news and like has an opinion on the Pope, even though it's like, I don't really. It is so funny to watch J.D. Vance be the most convert who ever converted. Like, he is right. So adult catechism. He's so obnoxious, know-it-all. Ugh.
So, Aaron, I'm curious because on Wednesday morning, J.D. Vance was on CBS This Morning with his wife, Usha, and they were talking about religion. And I'm very curious how you feel about what he had to say.
Oh, yeah. Let's watch the clip.
An interfaith marriage. How does it work in day-to-day life?
Well, it's actually very easy. I mean, one, there's a certain dynamism to it because she comes at things from a different perspective than I do. And so it always leads to very interesting conversations. But, you know, just practically what we've decided to do is raise the kids in the Christian church. We don't want to confuse little kids. Obviously, they can get confused. But we also haven't hidden anything about, you know, her understanding of the world or, you know, her parents, how they think about religious faith. So we've just tried to make it as easy and accessible to the kids as possible while, you know, sending them to Christian schools and raising them in the Christian church. Our six-year-old just got baptized a couple of weeks ago, actually. I guess a few weeks ago. It was Easter Sunday. But one of the things that's also interesting about it is because I was raised Protestant, I was raised in a very evangelical tradition. And typically, for example, evangelicals, Protestants don't get baptized until they're a little bit older. That's been an interesting thing, too, because we've elected, it's almost like the fusion of Usha's perspective and my old evangelical upbringing. We don't baptize the kids when they're young. We let them make that decision when they're older. And so there are all of these like interesting little ways in which it affects the practice of my faith, I think our relationship. But it's also just pretty easy, right? It's two people who love each other, two people who usually see the world in very similar ways, but not always. And I think that's true for most marriages, and it's made it very fun.
When you hear all that, what's your reaction as not only his spouse, but mm-hmm. as someone who has their own tradition and your own views of the world and faith?
Well, I mean, I grew up in this country around people of a range of Christian backgrounds and others as well. I had friends who were Baha'i, who were Muslim, I grew up in Southern California, so there were lots of Mormons around as well. So I think having people believe very fundamental things that you are not always perfectly aligned with the way that I think about the world is just very comfortable to me. And that was true in so many aspects of our relationship from the get-go, not just religious ones, that it just is of a piece with our relationship. I'm fine with JD kind of having a different worldview at times and having to express mine and have us come to some kind of compromise or understanding.
Okay. Oh, girl.
So much to say.
So much to say. First of all, the first time he said we're raising them in the Christian church, I was like,
right?
Oh, is that a slip up? And then he said it again. And
yes.
I was like, Catholics don't call themselves Christians. You know what I mean? It is a Christian
right.
faith, but you don't say like, oh, I'm going to go to Christian mass or like, I got to go like, it's a Christian ceremony at this wedding. You know, we're having the Eucharist at this Christian. It's like, no, it's Catholic. It's different than people who call themselves Christian generally are of the Protestant persuasion or like evangelical persuasion, not. And I feel like that's a little snaky thing he's doing. He's trying to be like, oh yeah, I'm Christian, but it's like, no, you're Catholic. And Catholicism still freaks out a lot of like conservative Christians.
But can I just point out one thing?
Mm-hmm.
Do you realize they never used the word Hindu?
No, they never use Hindu.
Never used the word Hindu. She didn't even use the word Hindu. And it felt like such a swerve to not use the word
mm-hmm.
that it was intentional, which I think is deranged. She also did not look comfortable.
No, she didn't. I mean, and granted, she's very pregnant.
She is. And she's like not our friend and not our concern.
No,
but
no, I mean, she makes her own choices. She's a grown up. It would be very unfeminist of us to not be to be like, oh no, she's a victim. It's like,
no, she's made her choices.
She is a smart, powerful woman who, you know, has her own mind and made it up. And this is what she's chosen. But she doesn't look like she's having a good time.
Not at all. She's made her bed. And the tour has only just begun.
The tour has only begun. Here's another thing. Him being like, yeah, we just baptized our 6-year-old. That's not, you're supposed to baptize babies in Catholicism. That's like part of the faith. You can't just like, it's a very dogmatic faith. If you want to freelance, there's plenty of, go to a Unitarian Universalist church. Like there's plenty of places you can kind of like freelance with that sort of thing. But like,
did you also catch it? Do you clock it when he said, you know, because like we're just like letting our kids decide.
But your kid's six. Your kid's
your
six.
Your kid is you're also like, if there was ever a household where I feel like kids didn't get a vote, it is that one.
Yeah. Letting the kids decide. I mean, it's one thing to say you're letting the kids decide, but then it's like that has to be that's what you say about getting their ears pierced. And then that starts at like 12, right? You know, like
right.
If they're six, you're kind of getting the worst of both worlds. Like you're not doing what the faith that you've made a deliberate effort to join says you're supposed to do. You're also not really letting the kid choose. It's just kind of like window dressing. I don't know. That sounds like it was come up, like it sounds like a committee came up with that.
Yeah. That was workshopped.
Yeah, that was workshopped. Wow. Okay. Well, this is going to be what our lives are all summer unless something more interesting happens. I just feel like I put a curse into the world. But
well, did you see the now Mike Pence's book comes out this week or next week?
How many trees have to die before we're like, enough? No more.
I don't know. But I was like, oh God, the same week. Publishers usually deconflict that kind of thing. So I think it's funny that Mike Pence's is coming out right about the same time.
That is really funny. Let's talk about something that isn't that funny. Alyssa, you love stories about the Postal Service, and I really appreciate your dedication to it. So
thank you.
Because it is important, you know?
It's important because people are not paying attention. And I have just like a weird, funny little side story about the USPS. Have you – because people – there's someone else who I read about who's like me that loves the post office so much. Do you know Erin French? She is the cook in Maine. She's the chef in Maine who has this restaurant called The Lost Kitchen.
Okay.
And it's in Freedom, Maine. And she found out – it's this teeny tiny town. And she found out that the local post office was going to close. And so years ago, she decided that the only way you could get a reservation, The Lost Kitchen, was by sending a postcard. As such – 20,000 to 30,000 postcards a year now come into their local post office and they saved it. See, I love a post office. Well, Trump is trying to weaponize our post office and it's so gross. So earlier this month, the USPS proposed a vague new rule that requires states to compile lists of mail-in absentee voters that postal employees can use to screen ballots for eligibility.
Wait, they're giving post... Okay. Have you ever been to a post
voter
office?
Rolls? Yes. This is crazy.
They hate doing extra stuff. They've got enough to do.
And they shouldn't have to.
They've got enough to do. But like, if you want to make someone mad, just go ask a postal employee to like do something annoying.
And so what the Trump administration is saying is that if states don't comply, the agency can refuse to send their ballots at all. So not only is this rule a logistical nightmare, it also certainly aims to suppress the votes of Democrats who are more likely to vote by mail than Republicans. The rule is currently open to a 30-day comment period and is expected to be decided sometime in July.
So who's making the decision on the rule?
Well, Erin, here's the weird thing. So again, as Trump continues to gut things, the USPS Board of Governors is an 11-member board. Currently, there are 5 vacant seats Trump is trying to fill. The 4 sitting governors are 2 Dems, 1 GOP, and 1 independent. By law, no more than 5 governors can be from any one party. but we see how bad the math can be here.
Yeah. Well, yeah. When has the Trump administration ever followed the law? They just nominated Bill Pulte to be in a, like, whatever. Anyway, yeah.
Exactly. But here's the other problem. This board has the power to appoint and remove the Postmaster General. Well, the U.S. Postmaster, Louis DeJoy, who was appointed in May 2020 and had been implementing a 10-year transformative plan, resigned in March. So whichever governors Trump confirms will appoint the new Postmaster General. Yeah. And just like FYI, these governors can serve 7-year terms and can be nominated twice. So this doesn't feel good.
No. Does the Postmaster General wear an interesting hat?
If they don't, they should.
I feel like they should. Like, I'm
does thinking, it feel like a conductor cap to you? Because
yes.
That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, like a train conductor. Like, choo-choo. I don't know why trains in
hold
the,
on. I'm looking it up now.
They should have a special hat. I mean, whoever it is, at the very least. See, this is called being a centrist. Like, hire whoever you want. But please, I am just asking that you give them a special hat. Okay, well, that's.
They don't have a hat.
Ugh, why? Why?
They don't have a hat. They don't have a special hat.
This
but
isn't
I, but
the America
I am being
I was promised.
I am now being served really incredible vintage USPS hats.
Ooh, that's fun. Okay, I was actually thinking maybe like a giant foam version of like the mailman cap,
or like some sort of like Mountie cap.
Yeah, yeah.
Just you know, it feels grand.
It does. Postmaster.
And important.
All right, moving on to another annoying story. Last week, the DOJ approved Paramount's $111 billion.
Boo.
That just sounds made up. There's not that many dollars. $111 billion Warner Brothers Discovery acquisition, which will result in CBS, CBS News, CNN, and HBO all living under one parent company. I can't see any problems there. I think it's going to be great. New York Post reports that the Free Press founder, CBS News editor-in-chief, and fucking guy, Barry Weiss, is in the running to expand her editorial oversight to include CNN. No, that makes sense. She's been doing a really good job at CBS, famously.
I just like, I'm like, okay, so that was reported by the Post. I can't tell. I'm like, we know the Post is very like right-leaning, but I'm like, do they hate her? Like, are they outing this so that people get so up in arms that it doesn't happen?
It could be that there is a Post source or Post ally or like somebody that the Post likes who thinks that getting this story in the Post will get the outcome that they want. Now, whether it's getting her promoted or getting
respect.
The story ridiculed so much that people are like, well, now we can't promote her.
Fuck, what are we going to do?
Yeah. Alyssa, how is she doing? Seriously, I mean, I was being sarcastic, but like, do we have any numbers?
I mean, look, just like cute, quick little reminder, according to The Hollywood Reporter, CBS Evening News declined by 11% in both total viewers and the key 25 to 54 demographic during their steepest spring slump, which directly followed changes implemented by Weiss. The advertiser coveted 25 to 54 demo plunged by 28% for the morning show.
Okay. Well, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe there's a bunch of people between 25 and 54 who were watching the morning show, the CBS News morning show, and thought, you know what? I should be doing literally anything else right now. And then
it feels like that's what happened.
It got bad enough that they're like, I got to get my life together.
It's like, what have I been doing?
Yeah.
Maybe. I could listen to Hysteria.
I mean, Barry is really a pioneer, though. I think it's really impressive that Barry Weiss is proving that extremely mediocre women can fail upward just as well as extremely mediocre men.
Dream big dreams.
Yeah, she's like the Sally Ride of sucking. There's a Sally Ride highway near me, by the way.
Is there really?
Yeah, doctor.
That's cool.
It's just a regular highway, but I felt good on it. I was like, I like her. I mean, she was an amazing, amazing lady. Also, she came out in her obituary.
I know. We talked about it, didn't we?
I think so. That was like very,
I
think that was very chic that she came out in her obit.
Very low key.
Very chic and low key. Well, I don't have any faith that Barry Weiss can be chic and low key as she takes charge of CNN. But you know what? I'm thinking of a lot of the journalists at CNN, like your Jake Tappers, like, you know, all of your, I cannot imagine.
They're not going to have it.
This is
Anderson Cooper. It's like Anderson Cooper just left 60 Minutes. He can't, like, are they going to drive him out of CNN too?
They're all going to get a Scott Pelley moment. It's going to do so well for all of them if they end up having to revolt and like take up, because like, I don't know, just the news anchor Stormoff is just unmatched.
Someone has to do it.
Someone has to do it. I think it'll be...
We deserve it.
I mean, if Barry has to take charge of CNN, in addition to all the other shit she's in charge of, I mean, it's funny that they're now merging with the parent company of HBO, because I was just imagining, like, Barry Weiss ruining an HBO show. Like, going into the writer's room and, like, fucking up.
Like, listen, guys, she showed up at the pit.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like, stop with this anti-vax stuff.
Yeah, this is too woke. This show is too woke. I mean, we're joking, but honestly, that does not sound
not really
too far-fetched, because the Ellisons are just letting her go everywhere. She's, like, got an all-access pass to fucking everything up. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Megan Gailey joins for more news. Hysteria is brought to you by Fatty 15. You know how everyone loves dolphins? Here's another reason to love our Flippard friends. They've helped unlock a core secret to healthy aging for all. I'm excited to share with you guys C15 from Fatty 15, the first emerging essential fatty acid to be discovered in more than 90 years. It's an incredible scientific breakthrough to support our long-term health and wellness. And you guessed it, healthy aging. Fatty 15 co-founder Dr. Stephanie Van Watson discovered the benefits of C15 while working with the U.S. Navy to continually improve the health and welfare of older dolphins.
Based on over 100 studies, we now know that C15 strengthens our cells and is a foundational, healthy aging nutrient, which helps to slow aging at the cellular level. In fact, when our cells don't have enough C15, they can become fragile and age faster. And when our cells age, our bodies age too.
What?
This eventually, yes, I mean, cause and effect, Erin, cause and effect.
Yeah, this sounds like a magic school bus lesson for sure.
Well, we're getting there. This eventually led to studies finding the first new nutritional deficiency to emerge in 75 years called cellular fragility syndrome, caused by a lack of C15. As many as 1 in 3 people worldwide may have low C15 levels and fragile cells. To help support and optimize healthy aging, a team of doctors funded by the U.S. Navy spent over a decade to develop the pure, science-backed, and bioavailable C15-0 ingredient in Fatty 15. Thankfully, Fatty 15 repairs age-related damage to cells, protects them from breakdown, and activates pathways in the body that help regulate our sleep, cognitive health, and metabolism. This functionality leads to so many other exciting benefits now and as we get older. In fact, 70% of Fatty 15 customers report seeing or feeling benefits within 16 weeks, including deeper sleep, calmer moods, better energy, and overall improved health. Now that's essential.
We're all aging, which means that healthy aging starts from birth. Studies have shown that C15 is a foundational nutrient that supports healthy growth and development in children and supports our long-term health as adults. Fatty 15 has 3 times more cellular benefits than EPA and omega-3. By replenishing our cells with the crucial C15 nutrient, Fatty 15 effectively repairs cells, reverses aging-related damage at the cellular level, and restores our long-term health and wellness. You know, something that has happened to me in the last few years is realizing I'm not going to have enough time to do all the stuff I want to do. Like, physically.
That's meta.
Like, there's not enough years. You know what I mean?
I know, it's true.
And I recently saw a post on social media of my sister-in-law's grandma. So my brother's wife's grandma.
Right.
Just turned 105 years old. She's
wow.
still talking. She can still get around. She's still fairly with it. 105 years old.
She's seen some shit.
She's seen some shit, and she's had a lot of good years. And just thinking about her has been like, oh, it's really important, especially as you are no longer at an age where you can just eat trash, sleep for 2 hours, and go to work hungover.
Nope.
Once you move past
those
that
days are
age,
gone.
You got to take care of yourself so that your good years last as long as possible. Fatty 15 is on a mission to support healthy aging for all, including all ages and stages of life. You can get an additional 15% off their 90-day subscription starter kit by going to fatty15.com/hysteria and using code hysteria at checkout.
Hysteria is brought to you by Honeylove. A few years ago, I realized that I was absolutely fed up with painful underwire bras and itchy materials.
I cannot imagine you tolerating anything uncomfortable ever.
I really can't. It's for the past 20 years, it's been a no.
No. And I feel like shapewear is one of those things that just is like, it's like, come on, you're just going to be uncomfortable.
If I have to be, there has to be a very good reason. But I don't really need to be.
No, you don't need to. You don't need to sacrifice it because of Honeylove.
We found Honeylove. They make comfortable bras with no slipping, no constant adjusting, just a secure, flattering fit that actually stays in place. The Honeylove crossover bra is my everyday bra, my special occasion bra, and the only bra I feel comfortable sleeping in. which is true. Honeylove is an independent, female-founded brand. All Honeylove products are intelligently designed by women who actually wear them, including founder Betsy, who is highly involved in the development of each product.
Alyssa, wait a second. Do you know how this sports bra was developed? I'm just going to give this as an example of like why Honeylove is really good. Like, you want women involved in this. The original sports bra was like two jock straps sewn together.
I did know that.
Yeah, and it didn't exist until like the late 70s. It's like crazy how little input from women's wear has had over the course of history. So like having a woman involved heavily in the design process of something that women wear
matters.
Very, very important. Here's where Honeylove stands out. Their bras are designed to provide lift and structure using innovative bonding technology instead of uncomfortable underwire. So you get that secure, lifted feel without poking, pinching, or constant adjusting. My favorite bra just got an upgrade. The new crossover contour bra is a perfect example. It combines their best-selling wireless design with molded foam cups to help create a smooth, natural shape, especially helpful for mature breasts that want a little extra structure and support. And their Cloud Embrace bra is a game changer, soft, breathable, and incredibly comfortable, but still supportive enough to replace your old underwire bras. It's the kind of bra you put on in the morning and don't think about again all day.
Because comfort isn't a luxury, it's a requirement. And support shouldn't mean sacrificing how you feel in your own skin. And it doesn't stop at bras. Honeylove shapewear is especially worth calling out. It's designed to smooth and support without squeezing or restricting, using targeted compression that works with your body. It stays in one place, moves with you, and gives you the extra confidence you need under everything from everyday outfits to special occasions. Honeylove products also feature lingerie-inspired design details you'll actually want to show off, along with high-quality fabrics that feel incredible against your skin. Thoughtful touches like breathable materials and easy bathroom access. It's always a funny selling point, but an important one.
It is
one.
An important selling point. Like, have you ever tried something on point. And you're like, this looks so cute. I'm going to have to get completely naked if I want to pee.
It's just no. It's no. Just, it's like you can't. Like, what? It's a no. They have easy access when you gotta pee. At the end of the day, this isn't about changing your body. It's about supporting it in a way that actually feels good. And Honeylove delivers that at every stage. Treat yourself to the most advanced bras and shapewear on the market. Use our exclusive link to save 20% off Honeylove at honeylove.com/hysteria. That's honeylove.com/hysteria. After you check out, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience the new standard in comfort and support with Honeylove.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for sports enjoyers. Yeah, that's right. We enjoy sports. We're really excited to have one of our podcast besties, I guess. Mm-hmm. She's been part of the show since 2018, older than J.D. Vance's Catholicism. Megan Gailey, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. You know I'm always excited to come when it's sports week at Hysteria.
I get a feeling that it's kind of like sports summer. Like there are so many stories in the news that are directly related to politics, that are directly related to current events, that are in and of sports.
Mm-hmm. So, which is good.
Yeah. It is, because summer is usually, you know, there's no NFL. The NBA just ended. It's sort of considered the quote unquote off season for diehard fans. But we are getting a lot of sports content. And I do think the heavens have sent it because we do need it.
Yeah, we do need some circuses because the bread's gotten too expensive, right? Alyssa, I know you're a huge UFC fan.
Thank you so much.
You're always UFC and your favorite guys in it. You're always talking about those guys. Can you tell us a little bit about the UFC fight?
Please.
The UFC fight that was just hosted on the South Lawn of the motherfucking White House.
Which was not Donald Trump's 80th birthday party. Well, Trump said the event was perfect, and UFC CEO Dana White said it was amazing, but will never happen again. Okay, that sounds amazing.
Oh, that sounds like me after a date when I was 27.
Yeah. After Cliff took me to Senior Frogs in the Village.
That sounds better than UFC on the lawn, honestly.
I would say yes, because this UFC fight was extremely gross county fair vibes, and I love a county fair, but this was There were no charming farm animals. There was no midway lined with fry dough or 4-H milkshakes. This was the literal and figurative swamp. Booming music, bright lights, and I can only assume loads of mosquitoes after it rained. Because it did. It did.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, God. Imagine the shoes.
Can you imagine how gross?
What if you wore like Republican heel, like sandals?
But they did. There are pictures of like women in sleeveless because it's DC, it's hot out. But like every time I was watching this for the week when I was watching the weather forecast, I was like, I lived in DC. There are going to be mosquitoes.
Yeah.
I hope everyone's got their calamine lotion. But, you know, Zach Brown was there. He sang the national anthem. Joe Rogan conducted in-ring interviews, even though he said this was a bad idea of an event on his podcast. And one of the champions of the night, Josh Hoik, I don't know how you say it because I don't care, ended his victory speech with a extremely transphobic slur about Michelle Obama. So, 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Perfect use of the South Lawn, which, just because you guys know, I have the special place in my heart for the way that I think things should be used. So let me just talk about some of the more, I don't know, special ways. And there's one that I think Erin is particularly going to feel fond about.
Okay.
So previously, South Lawn used for the egg roll since 1878. State dinners like the one hosted for the U.S. Bicentennial in 1976. George H.W. Bush frequently hosted T-ball on the lawn, turning it into a baseball diamond for little leaguers, particularly children of active duty military personnel. President Carter hosted the signing of the Camp David peace accords with the Egyptians and Israelis, which is so weird because Trump is signing his Iran deal like remotely. And Erin, this one is for you.
Okay.
During World War I, President Woodrow Wilson brought a flock of 48 Shropshire sheep to act as natural lawnmowers to save on manpower, and their wool was later auctioned off, raising more than $50,000 for the Red Cross war effort.
These are fun. These are great ideas. Also, like the sheep thing, do you know, Alyssa, have I shared with you that it is my dream? Like, the older I get, the more I'm like, I am turning into my father in certain ways. And it's kind of my dream to be like an urban adjacent farmer, but like, I don't like killing the animals.
No,
I don't want to breed them necessarily. I just want to like have them. And one way to have an animal and just keep it alive is to have like mercenary sheep that you just have a flock and you're like, hey, you got a vacant lot? You want my sheep to eat or goats or whatever? I would love to have a flock of mercenary sheep. I think it'd be so fun.
I do know a goat farmer.
Okay.
Very close with him. They make cheese. They milk, maybe?
Do the goats get stuck up on the roof? Because I have a friend here and her goats always end up on her roof.
I'm not sure. I was in a high school play with a goat.
A real goat?
Yes, live goats. And we were wearing straw hats as part of our costume. And that was a tough combination come opening night. The goat did eat our hats and then poop all over the stage.
Wait,
that's amazing.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. Well, see, but Trump didn't do any of that. He could have done all these cool,
so
funny
many
things,
but he didn't.
Is this the worst use of taxpayer money ever? Like,
I mean, fuck yes. This is so stupid. I mean, it's just a basket of lies too, because it's also, there is no way of actually knowing how much U.S. taxpayers are going to pay for this. Trump says nothing. Trump says no U.S. taxpayers. So the UFC created some entity called like the UFC Freedom 250, which was the entity that they put the money into to pay for the event. However, there's a lot of jiggery pokery here, like lots of reports that at least like between $700,000 and $1 million worth of damage was done to the South Lawn. Needs to be repaired.
I don't understand how a lawn can cost that much money. Like, as I pointed out a couple of weeks ago, I don't know how much a pool cost, but I thought a pool costs like $500,000 to install.
Well, it's really big and they have to replace it with sod.
It's, you know, special, it's not grass.
They're
it's
not just special. Taking out the Scott turf builder, you know, like I do when I get bad patches in my lawn.
And men across all political leanings love their lawns.
Yeah.
Donald Trump probably doesn't care, but I think it's kind of like one of these things that it's so photographed from the back, you know, like if you're on the ellipse side of the White House that you you don't want the fucking it seeded with the hay on the top and then you put the sod, you know what I mean? So I think, or straw, I forget if it's hay or straw that you put on top of the grass, but it all feels like the fleecing of America for Donald Trump's 80th birthday.
One thing that I was thinking of, I mean, I didn't watch the fight because I don't, I'm not, UFC.
Well, because we couldn't. It was on Paramount Plus.
Oh, we have Paramount Plus. Josh works in film and TV advertising. We got all of them.
You know what?
I
guess actually I do too.
Yeah, we got them all. But
and that was the Ellisons. You know, like it's like we're doing monopolies and wild things, even not pertaining specifically to the fights themselves.
Yes, absolutely. But I didn't watch the fights because like I just don't give a shit. But the thought did occur to me like this is Cash Patel shit. Like overly
performative. Where's he been?
Where has he been? Overly performative, corny masculinity is 100% his shit. Mm-hmm. So where has he been?
Well, Aaron, he's made an appearance. So first, on Tuesday morning, Cash Patel announced that the FBI foiled a planned attack on the UFC fight, which, by the way, the details of it are kind of scary. According to the affidavit released, there was a plot to target the fight with drones and shooters. A 19-year-old in Ohio has been arrested for his involvement in the planned attack. And so Cash once again rushes to Truth Social to post first, which enraged the Secret Service, prompting the deputy director of the Secret Service to say in a press conference, quote, "Don't choke on your own smoke."
Wait, he posted about it? He posted about this alleged thing?
Yeah.
Okay. This investigation about, you know, into the alleged plot, maybe I'm a cynic, but it really sounds like the sort of thing the FBI was like trapping, like, teenagers in Queens into planning back in like the post 9/11 era. It sounded very entrappy. Like a informant like engaged with a teen was like, "Hey, what if we did a terrorism?" And the teen is like, "Yeah, I'd love to do a terrorism." Boss.
Which might be why Secret Service was like, "Look, we found it. We got it. We don't need to like." And Cash was like, "No, let me expose this in this terrorism." So now Secret Service has to explain it. And again, and Aaron gets the response that you just gave.
Yeah.
Now, does that have anything to do with this narrative they're pushing about how we really need the ballroom? So like next time when we have a UFC fight, we got to have it inside at the ballroom because drones can't fly inside.
This is all in service of the ballroom and the money that I think Congress still has not approved.
No, and for Donald Trump is already spending taxpayer money on the ballroom despite claiming that he hasn't been.
Right, exactly.
There was just an expose that came out in, I believe, the Washington Post.
Yep.
That was like, he's been spending taxpayer money. Even when he was promising that he wasn't.
Because it's all a foil now that he added this secure facility underneath the ballroom. That's how you obfuscate the money.
Okay, but like, do they just give the president like America's debit card? Like, why does he get to just...
So he doesn't. He doesn't. But there are agencies that have funds that sometimes run year over year. And so I think, and listeners, don't get mad at me. I think this is close to correct. I think that the money he has been using is Secret Service money. And when the president tells you, this is to make it safer, give me some of your money, which of course, Secret Service is part of DHS. So- Mark Wayne Mullen. It all kind of tracks.
Hmm. I did not watch the UFC event. I am actually, if you follow me on Threads, fighting with all of its fans currently, which I didn't even expect to be happening. That was just a fun
Why are they mad at you?
Because I made a joke about comedian Nate Bargatze was photographed with RFK Jr. And so it sort of like outed him as being MAGA. And a lot of people are really, really mad at him because they're like, "Hey, you talk about your kids. There's no way you're MAGA." And then his response to that or a response from a source close to him was, no, he was only there because UFC is his favorite sport. And so I made a joke that I actually think it's more embarrassing to admit that UFC is your favorite sport. And they are really mad at me. And so I'm currently fighting with them. There were a lot of like All of the ads for it had to do with Trump-based coinage that's invented. So he does have this debit card he seems to be using, and he is also just inventing new ways to scam people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and didn't the fighters get paid in, like, Trump bucks or whatever?
Trump crypto or whatever called.
Trump bucks or Trump dollars, like a...
Trump coin.
They're digital coupons. I owe you one money. You'll definitely get it. I'm really good at paying people. I never stiff people ever. All right, well, that happened.
There you go. I'm an official UFC expert.
That happened. Our president is America's oldest birthday boy. And that sounded like a dumb and tacky event. And I hope everybody got bitten by a lot of mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Megan, I understand there was a basketball thing that happened recently.
Yes, there was. Now, you can hear in my voice that I'm less than thrilled, but I am going to be professional and give you the facts of it, despite my leanings, okay? The New York Knicks ended a 53-year drought and won the NBA championship over the weekend. And even me, a lifelong Knicks hater, and that's for a different episode, can acknowledge that it has brought some much-needed joy to not just New Yorkers, but casual sports fans all across the country. And while MVP Jalen Brunson, we love him, New York City Mayor Zohan Mamdani, we love him, and Knicks superfan Spike Lee, who I'm even okay with, have been the faces of the historic run, looming very closely behind the scenes is Knicks owner and Trump bestie James Dolan. Now, Dolan owns the Knicks, the New York Rangers, Madison Square Garden, and Radio City Music Hall. And how did he get his wealth?
How?
Inheritance. Yes.
He earned it. Bootstraps.
Exactly. That's why him and Trump, they're like, yeah, we're best friends.
Yeah. He pulled himself out of his mom by his bootstraps.
So he, for the last few decades, honestly, has been widely considered one of the worst owners in all of sports. But he changed his meddling ways in the last few seasons and has been refreshingly hands-off, focusing on his current pet project, owning the Las Vegas Sphere.
Oh, he owns the Sphere?
Jesus Christ.
That was a tough thing to learn. And people are honestly like, oh my gosh, if he hadn't opened the Sphere, there's no way the Knicks would have won. Like, it kept him busy with a new toy.
That's
crazy.
Interesting.
Yes. So Trump and Dolan are very close, which is why Dolan invited Trump to take a little nap on national television during game 3 of the NBA Finals. Dolan is a super donor of Trump. Dolan was married at Mar-a-Lago, as was his son, and he is currently trying to get New York's Penn Station renamed after Donald Trump.
Make it stop.
No, I think I actually think naming Penn Station after Donald Trump is great because Penn Station fucking sucks.
Exactly.
But no, but as a New Yorker, we now have Moynihan after the beloved Daniel Patrick Moynihan. We have Moynihan Station. We're phasing out Penn Station. Penn Station is like if you get off the train and walk the wrong way.
then let him have it, much like the Sphere. Okay.
I guess. Just don't muck up my Moynihan Station.
Worst vibes in New York City is Penn Station.
Agree. Even the pigeons are sad there. much like his bestie, Dolan has also faced allegations of racism and sexual assault. And probably the biggest scandal that has surrounded him recently is his invasive use of facial recognition to keep enemies out of Madison Square Garden. He is currently being sued for targeting a transgender woman and adding her to MSG's Do Not Enter list simply because she is transgender.
What? Why did he pick this one woman?
Well, so they were tracking her very closely down to the minute. They were tracking when she was going to the bathroom, where she was sitting, and he made a directive, and this has come out in court, keep her away. No, I believe the quote actually was, keep whatever she is away from Knicks players. So they targeted her because they believed she was trying to cozy up to Knicks players.
Okay.
Okay, wow. So has anyone told Jalen Brunson, superfan, Mariska Hargitay, any of this because I feel like she would not be okay.
That's the thing that's like, so I have been very publicly anti-Knicks, and that's just because I'm a Pacers fan. I'm not even bringing up James Dolan. It's just like, it's Hatfield and McCoy's. It's not good. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I highly recommend a documentary called Winning Time. It's a hoot and a half. And like, that's why a lot of people don't necessarily like the Knicks is because of this guy. I mean, like, we're talking in the ranks of Jerry Jones.
I was going to say
Snyder,
Jerry Jones vibes.
Owns like it's he's a bad guy, and you may be wondering, like, okay, he owns a sports franchise, are they all bad quote-unquote guys? And the reality is, in the NBA and the NFL and no, like, all billionaires are actually not created equal.
Mm-hmm. Right. There are some owners. I think the Milwaukee Bucks owners are good.
Yes.
Right?
Is that the Lazarys?
So it was the Milwaukee Bucks former owners. They no longer own the team, I believe. The Indiana Pacers owner, the Simons. They build
malls. The Simons are good people.
And they build democracy.
Yes, they do.
Steve Ballmer, billionaire, built his own stadium, self-financed it. His wife is a mega, mega Democratic donor, and he himself is too. And Arthur Blank, who owns the Atlanta Falcons, also leans Democrat and donates that way. So that's just like a sampling. James Dolan is not going to have to sell the team. At one point, there were like murmurs of that. Now that they've won, there's no way that's happening. But I do think it's important to at least know where the money is going to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that's so – it's such a complicated question to – I mean, as a sports fan, have you ever, Megan, had to like withdraw your support of a team because you were just like, I just cannot get behind what the front office and management is and who they are?
I have been very blessed as an Indianapolis fan, not with championships, but with good owners. Jim Irsay, rest in peace, was a massive advocate for mental health and gave the team to his three daughters. And so the NFL team that I root for is run by three women now. The Simons own the Pacers. I'm also a Dodgers fan. Mm-hmm. And the Dodgers ownership is tricky, owns the prisons that ICE detainees are being sent to.
Considering the fan base of the Dodgers and like it is so woven into LA Mexican American culture, Latino culture in LA, like, oh God, that's problematic. That's troublesome.
And they are like, Magic Johnson also owns a stake in the Dodgers. Like a lot of teams are owned by a lot of different people, but I know, and I have talked to people who are massive Dodgers fans who are like, yeah, I'm not going to a game this year. No, A, it's probably gotten too expensive. And B, they're just like, I don't want my money to go there. And so this came up a lot during the Super Bowl where people were like, root for the Seahawks. They have a female owner who it does not like Trump. So I always think it's like, if you're on the fence, if you're a casual fan, to go at least to who the owner are, and that can give you something to root for.
Okay. Well, that is, because sports are tough, because I think that there's always somebody big behind the scenes, and a lot of times the big person is bad. A really good example of that, international soccer, football.
Yes.
We're going to call it soccer because that's what it's called in America. But I respect calling it, it makes more sense to be called football. Okay. So the U.S. is currently co-hosting the Men's World Cup with Canada and Mexico, but amidst immigration crackdowns and travel bans, it is not the friendliest time for the U.S. to be hosting people from all over the world. Al Jazeera reported that top Somali football ref Omar Artan was denied entry into the U.S. despite being sent to officiate games. Iraqi striker Ayman Hussein had his phone inspected and was detained for nearly 7 hours before being allowed into the country. And the team photographer had a similar experience, but was denied access altogether. The entire Iranian squad was not granted visas until 10 days before their first match, and several members of the support team were denied visas. Iran's base camp was also relocated from Arizona to Tijuana, despite their first three games all being in the U.S.
It's insane.
I know. And the team is permitted to enter the U.S. the day before each match, but ordered to leave immediately after. The fans are struggling to cheer on their teams as well. According to data analysis from the BBC, fans from over a quarter of the participating countries are facing travel bans, tighter restrictions, or high visa rejection rates. Countries have set up their home bases in different cities, and this is a fun story, actually. Yeah. Algeria landed at a DoubleTree in Lawrence, Kansas, and the city is, like, obsessed with the Algerian soccer team now. They're showing up to their workouts and cheering them on and cheering for them in games and stuff. I just want to remind listeners, I've seen a lot of stuff online that's like, oh my gosh, this is Kansas. Oh, in Kansas, it's so cute. Lawrence, Kansas is a college town.
Yeah.
That is a blue city.
Lawrence, Kansas. I was just going to say, Lawrence, as like political, when we have done events for multiple presidentials, Lawrence, Kansas, always super friendly, always good vibes.
Lawrence is the Austin of Kansas.
It is. That's a great, well, yes, that's great.
We've lost Austin a bit in the last few years. Okay.
Lawrence.
Circle back to the UFC story.
Okay.
Lawrence is the Madison of Kansas.
Yes.
It is.
Okay.
It's the Madison of Kansas for sure. Megan, what are your thoughts on how the World Cup is playing globally? Like, what's the good? What's the bad? What's the ugly?
I love seeing the uniforms. I love seeing the hunks. I love like learning about different cultures. I mean, there's all the sort of pros that the Olympics has too, of just like, oh my gosh, the world can come together for a greater cause, which is football. and at the background of it is we as a country are not great hosts because of the political climate. And I think similarly with the Olympics, the ruling body in the International Olympic Committee and in FIFA are extremely corrupt. And so it's not that different than this Dolan thing of going, yes, I'm going to celebrate this soccer. I want to see the carousel team dance for the rest of my life. Like, there's genuine beauty happening in it. I'm so glad they expanded to allow for more teams and now smaller countries are involved. And if there is a way to support the World Cup while also going FIFA is evil, then that's probably where I fall.
Yeah, I mean, there have been some issues, too, with cities expecting hotels to fill up.
Yeah.
And then the hotels not filling up. Alyssa, as someone who has planned giant events or helped coordinate giant events, is this a failure in planning or a failure in execution?
Well, I think it's a little bit of everything. I think that the U.S. has made our country not hospitable. And so are you going to spend thousands of dollars on a trip here to watch something if you don't live here and potentially be detained, potentially not be able to get in? Like, guess what? You reap what you sow. And I think that that's what's happened. But my personal interaction with the World Cup is I cannot get enough of little kids in the jerseys.
Oh, they're so cute.
Did you see the little boy? I can't even handle it. There was a little choir of children in Mexico who were singing, and they all had their jersey on. Megan, I know you know what I'm going to say. And there was this little boy who didn't have a jersey, but he wore his Christmas jumper that was the same colors.
Oh.
And the Mexican team saw it, and they presented him personally with a little what do they call it? Uniform.
A little kit.
So cute.
Yes, a little kit. And I was – so anyway, once I clicked on that, now I just get kids getting jerseys, or I get fathers being gifted tickets for Father's Day.
Yes.
That's my entire feed
that's good
right
content.
Now.
But all of this like heartwarming content, the Lawrence, Kansas, the kids in the jerseys, the little choirs, the kids holding hands with the athletes as they take the field, like all of these moments do obscure – an entity that is pretty bad, FIFA. So Megan, can you explain to listeners why FIFA is bad?
Oh my gosh, that's a loaded question. I mean, FIFA is corrupt to its core. They do not care about anything outside of money. Mm-hmm. In 2018, the World Cup was held in Russia. Mm-hmm. And now, 8 years later, Russia is not even allowed to participate in it. Now, there has been a war that transpired during that time, but the sanctions from the UN against Vladimir Putin were absolutely well documented in 2018. And FIFA said, yeah, let's go ahead and do it anyways. Extremely racist, extremely misogynistic. You could buy them with any amount of money.
So, I mean, that's why it was in Qatar like a last World Cup, and they had to play games at weird times and stuff.
Because it was so fucking hot.
Yeah, and they also they awarded Donald Trump a peace prize. This was
Yes, they did. That's right.
This was before he took us into war in Iran. So
they also like the sanctity of the game. In 2015, there were dozens of top FIFA officials who were indicted for racketeering, wire fraud, and money laundering.
Mm. Well, and Megan, isn't it, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but isn't FIFA, it's structured, right? It's a Swiss association. Mm-hmm. It almost operates like a club, not a global corporation. So there's like, there are no shareholders. It's like, there's like no oversight of the organization, which is like how it gets so corrupt.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think there's a lot to be said about how gambling has sort of blurred mm-hmm. the lines across every sport. And FIFA's like, oh, we've been doing that for decades. Like they've been gambling and committing crimes within their own organization, like rampant.
Yeah. And meanwhile, everybody is they have all these emotions that they've like stirred up around the actual thing that is giving them money, which mm-hmm. kind of sports washes what they're really up to.
I think a major issue that applies to every single person, though, is that the prices are insane.
Right.
And so, yes, we want to see the little kids and we want to. We're talking $4,000, $5,000. And this also happened with the Knicks. There was a massive price gouging issue. Mm-hmm. I know I keep seeing people call on Congress to do something about it, but games are not full. And mm-hmm. this is the biggest sporting event in the world ever. Like, more people watch the World Cup than anything else. And then you look at these stadiums and you're like, why aren't they filled with people? And it's because people simply can't afford to go. And I do think just across sports and live events in general, we've got to create a section that is for diehard fans in the way that they do a student section at a university.
Right. It's crazy that they charge so much for these tickets, because part of what is schemey and gross about FIFA is like how much leverage they put on host countries and cities, and like demanding local tax laws be overturned and tax exemptions. And so mm-hmm. it's like nobody's really like, it's fucked up. Like, yeah. How much is enough?
Yeah, they come in. They're like bad house guests, I think.
Yeah.
They come in. They use all your shit. They leave a big mess. They leave the toilet clogged, and then they're like, welcome. Yeah, you're welcome.
Use unsafe labor. Like, yep. They cut every single corner and then are like, you need to give us a bunch of money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very American.
It is very American. I mean, yeah, that makes sense. That being said, I am still going to keep watching the games, because the games themselves are so fun to watch.
Yes. Yeah.
Soccer is amazing. The FIFA is not.
I think the overall like theme of this is conscious fandom. To know when you're watching something, where the money is going to, who the ruling bodies are, and to make sure your algorithm is mostly kids getting new jerseys.
Yes. All right. That's exactly right, Megan. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more hysteria. Hysteria is brought to you by Willie's Remedy. Sometimes I want to take the edge off after a long day, but I know alcohol isn't the right move and certainly can't handle the hangover. That's why I love Willie's Remedy. Oh, Willie's Remedy is so good, Alyssa.
I love Willie's.
It is so good. It made its debut in my friends from all over the place group chat this week.
Yeah.
We were talking about different ways people relax at the end of the day that with things that are not alcohol. And, you know, some of my friends mentioned like gummies and brownies. And I think Willie's Remedy is the gold standard for me.
I agree. Same. I have tried many different brands. You know, I am a THC infused connoisseur.
You are famously a connoisseur of THC. Well, Willie's is a premium THC infused social tonic crafted by the legendary Willie Nelson. Inspired by Willie's way of living, where peace flows freely and hangovers are a thing of the past. I'm just imagining this as like a cartoon. I don't know if you are.
It is. I picture him just sitting down with a sippy sip of this before he does it Farm Aid.
Feet out. barefoot, yeah. No shoes, no socks. It is a low-calorie, low-sugar alcohol alternative that actually works, delivering a fast-acting, euphoric social buzz without the regrets that come with alcohol. Willie's Social Tonics come in 5-milligram and 10-milligram doses with a best-in-class flavor experience, so smooth and balanced, you barely realize you're drinking a THC product at all. You can enjoy the tonics as a shot, sipped over ice, or mixed into your favorite mocktail. Willie's is not that feared edible you ate too much of in college.
True.
Each bottle of Willie's is third-party lab-tested for accurate dosage so you can trust and customize your experience. Willie's unique blend of THC, CBD, CBG, and L-theanine delivers a feeling of calm, clarity, euphoria, and relaxation.
Absolutely. One shot of Willie's helps you relax, unwind, and de-stress. Perfect for taking the edge off at the end of a long day or socializing with friends. Willie's offers the kind of feeling that makes good company even better. Willie's sold out 3 times in the first 6 months with over 50,000 happy customers, and they just restocked. Willie's ships directly to your doorstep in over 40 states. Order now at drinkwillies.com and use code HYSTERIA for 20% off your first order plus free shipping on orders over $95. And enjoy life in the high country.
Hysteria is brought to you by Brodo. If you've ever tried bone broth and hated the taste, forget everything you know about
Brodo. Stop it. You haven't tried Brodo.
No. Our next sponsor makes bone broth so good I can't stop drinking it. Okay, so here's the thing. I had tried bone broth in the past and been sort of like, it's fine. Like
it's plain.
Yeah, it's fine. And then I went for a long time without having bone broth. And then I had Brodo. And then I tried regular bone broth again, and I was like, what the frog is this? This is—
Yeah, just give me my Brodo.
Give me my Brodo. Brodo's is the gold standard. It is so good. I know we keep saying gold standard, but
it is so good, Erin. You know, I was literally sick for 2.5 months this winter. Mm-hmm. I do not know what I would have done without my Brodo. It literally kept me going.
It really does feel like you drink it when you're sick, and it doesn't matter what you're sick with. For the most part, it helps hydrate you.
It's protein.
It adds nourishment, collagen.
It's got vitamins and minerals. It is the best for my body when I am unwell.
Yeah. And it's funny. Every time my husband's been sick and I've given him some Brodo, he's like, I feel much better after I drink. And I think it's just the act of having something warm and nourishing. It just—
Yeah. And also good. An empty stomach does not feel good, like when you're sick. But too much, it can be too much. And sometimes Brodo is also just like the glide path to maybe being able to put a little more in your tummy at some point.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Brodo's bone broth is the simplest nutrition upgrade you can make to your daily routine. The broths are made from scratch, no concentrates, preservatives, or shortcuts, so you get the best broth money can buy. Brodo was launched by James Beard award-winning chef Marco Canora. 11 years ago, he started serving bone broth out of the window of his New York City restaurant. Now Brodo ships nationwide, so you don't have to be in New York City to enjoy Chef Marco's masterpiece. Unfortunately, you do have to be in New York City to enjoy the impeccable vibes of the city. This week.
The vibes.
The vibes are great, but you can get the broth.
The vibes this week are off the charts.
Yeah. The last time I had Brodo was 2 days ago.
Yeah, I had Brodo last week.
2 days ago. And I'm saving it because I get a shipment of it now every month.
Yes.
And by
me too.
The end, I'm like, okay, you sure you want to spend your Brodo?
I'll make it with rice. If I'm making rice, I'll use a little Brodo. I mean, it's like there's so much.
There's so
endless
much.
Options
there's
to do
so
with
many
Brodo.
Endless options.
Each cup of Brodo delivers about 10 grams of whole food protein along with collagen building amino acids, electrolytes, and nutrients to support gut health, immunity, joints, skin, and general wellness, all under 50 calories and with zero sugar or fat. But is broth really actually good for you, or is it all just hype? Unlike the latest Instagram health fad, bone broth has been around for centuries, so it has proven results. A 2025 study actually found that the amino acids in broth heal leaky guts and strengthen the immune system. And Brodo comes in 8 delicious flavors, from classic chicken to the spicy Nona. Love the spicy Nona. To so more good. Creative brands like ginger turmeric, herb-infused, or veggie-based broths, I recommend trying their sampler pack so you can figure out for yourself what flavor is best for you. From chefs like David Chang and Bobby Flay to outlets like the New York Times and Good Morning America, Brodo has been consistently recognized as a bone broth pioneer. Shop the best broth on the planet with Brodo. Head to brodo.com/hysteria for 20% off your first subscription order and use code hysteria for an additional $10 off. Once again, that's brodo.com/hysteria for 20% off your first subscription and an additional $10 off if you use our promo code hysteria.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, a truly bisexual podcast. The hosts are straight, but the producers are gay. Which is true. You don't know if we're saying a gay thing or a straight thing because our producers are very, very
important. Yeah, you never know.
You never know.
And now it's mid-June, so bisexuality can have the second half of Pride.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Bisexuality gets the second half of Pride. Okay, the New York Times kicked off Pride Month with a poorly advised article with the headline that was originally, "Being straight is great, actually." I want to know what editor wrote that. I really want to know because, like, that is on the eve of Pride Month. They later retitled it to "There's Nothing Wrong with Wanting Men," which is correct, I guess. The author, Magdalene J. Taylor, who is a senior editor at Playboy, muses on why, in her opinion, heteropessimism is, quote, "little more than a bad mood about the state of being straight." She pretty much blames women for blaming men and encourages hetero-optimism instead. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what is heteropessimism? It's a word that I've seen thrown around a lot, especially in light of some pop culture offerings like the film Obsession that has come out recently. It was actually a term that was first popularized by an academic named Asa Cesarin in a 2019 essay. We're just noticing it and talking about it a little bit more now. I've seen it like bubbled up in 2022. People were talking about it. It's sort of an every 2 years thing, like the Olympics. here's the definition Saracen defined in his essay. Heteropessimism consists of performative disaffiliations with heterosexuality, usually expressed in the form of regret, embarrassment, or hopelessness about straight experience. Heteropessimism generally has a heavy focus on men as the root of their problem. That these disaffiliations are performative does not mean that they are insincere, but rather that they are rarely accompanied by the actual abandonment of heterosexuality. Sure, some heteropessimists act on their beliefs, choosing celibacy or the now largely outmoded option of political lesbianism, yet most stick with heterosexuality even as they judge it to be irredeemable. Even incels overflowing with heteropessimism stress the involuntary nature of their condition. Okay, so that's heteropessimism. It's like straight people being like, this fucking sucks. I hate this. And it's mostly women being like, why do men fucking suck? I hate them, but I can't not be attracted to them. This sounds familiar to me. Megan, does it feel familiar to you?
It absolutely does. I would invite you to come to my monthly book club, and it's mostly heteropessimism, which, like, I guess they're saying it's performative in the sense that then the three of us are all still married to men, despite the fact that we're like, men are awful. But like, I'm also practicing what I'm preaching.
Okay, what does that mean? How are you practicing your heteropessimism?
Fighting UFC fans on Threads, dragging my husband and dumb things he does in my stand-up, demanding better, bringing up how the bar was exceedingly low. And so the fact that millennial fathers and partners are now doing more around the house than ever before really isn't enough still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is all kind of bubbling, like, just below the surface, and it's coming up in pop culture right now. Like, I mentioned the film Obsession, which is a sort of, like...
Nope.
It's not for Alyssa.
Scary.
You probably don't want to see a woman get beaten to a pulp on a steering wheel. Spoiler alert.
Absolutely fucking not. Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, and they wonder why we don't like men.
No, a woman does it. A woman beats.
Okay. Equality. Ally.
Yes. She's a girl boss. She girl bosses that murder real bad. So Obsession is a little indie horror movie that could. It's kind of like Gen Z coded horror movie. It was directed by a 26-year-old. It's been killing it at the box office. It was made for under $10 million. And so it's a really encouraging film story because it's like, wow, an original story that got made into a movie that a lot of people are going to watch. And I can practically hear agents calling up people to pitch scripts and being like, oh, it's like Obsession meets blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's Obsession meets Succession. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's Obsession meets Game of Thrones, whatever. So there are going to be imitators. So this is not going to be the first film that comes out that kind of makes a horror version or a highly dramatized version of one mode of heterosexual relationship. So Obsession is a film about a lovesick young man who wishes on a magical toy that his dream girl, Nikki, will love him more than anybody in the world. Now, the wish comes true, but in a terrible way. And Nikki basically becomes his romantic slave. Oh. She no longer has the ability to say no to him. And she's obsessed with him because he wished for her to love him. And so she's kind of taken over by this entity that like forces her body to perform love to him, and also act very weird. There are moments in the film where the real Nikki is able to talk, like she can express herself, and they're very sad because she's kind of like, help me, like I was never with you. The protagonist, Bear, is also creeped out by the slave that he accidentally made, but he's told he can't leave her because he did this to her. So there's the blood, screaming, death, murder, mayhem, etc.
Jesus Christ.
To me, I thought it was really well constructed. Of course, I had
Aaron's
to.
Like, I loved it.
I'm actually kind of a pussy about horror movies. I have to like read the description. I have to read a like detailed synopsis before I watch it because otherwise I'm so scared that I can't appreciate the filmmaking. But right? So I did have to do that. But what it reminded me of was. Right now, we're in this age or this time where it feels it's a very heteropessimistic age. Like men are very openly hostile or anti-woman, but they also, those same men, like the Trumpist MAGA type people, also want to force women into dependence on men again. They want to make laws so that it's hard for a woman to be single, so it's hard for a woman to get an education without owing so much money that she's going to be drowning in it forever. They want to make it so it's hard for women to not get pregnant or to become unpregnant once they're pregnant, or if they're pregnant, to receive proper medical care for things that could happen. To me, obsession feels like a dramatization of like, yeah, man, okay, what if you get what you want? What if you get what if you get the conditions where women need you and cannot leave? Isn't that horrible? And I feel like that's a reflection of sort of the heteropessimism that's like bubbling, but that I've just been seeing a lot of lately. And it kind of is like this men are trash thing. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people blame it for like the falling birth rates. I've seen it being blamed for like lower marriage rates. I read recently that a quarter of 40-year-olds have never been married. Mm. In like the early 1980s, it was single digit percentage. I think it was like 6% of 40-year-olds like that 50 years ago had not been married, and now it's one quarter. So, Alyssa, I'm going to start with you. You nodded with familiarity when I was defining heteropessimism. Do you consider yourself a heteropessimist, and do you think it's part of a larger trend?
I mean, no, I don't think I'm well, I don't know. Like, I love my husband. Like, I think he's great. You know, I'm glad I married him, and I'm glad I met him. Other than him, do I feel like before I met him that the world was my fucking oyster? Definitely mm-hmm. not. Like, I'd say that most of the dates and that I went on were trash. So I guess I feel hetero lucky that I met my husband, and I guess maybe I am hetero pessimist because like were not for him, I definitely think I'd still be single.
Yeah. Megan, what are your thoughts? Would you get married again if you weren't with CJ?
Absolutely not.
I wouldn't get married again if it weren't with DK.
I can't either.
Think of a like. There's no one who I've ever who's caught my eye. Like, there's no maybe David Beckham. Okay, but only because he's got a farm with chickens now. Okay, that's it. But like, other than that, other than David, I guess I am. Yes, I would say hetero pessimist. Sorry, back to you, Megan.
Yeah, I am absolutely hetero pessimist. I mean, I go on stage and go, I hate men. If all of you die on the way home tonight, I'll be fine. I mean, and you know, we're saying it a little in jest, okay? Please don't message me.
You have two tiny men.
And I love them. And that's actually that's its own horror movie where I'm like, oh my God, I hate men. Men hate me. And then I go, well, I created two. And so now I got to raise them to be the best boys on earth. I do hear my peers say they would never get married again. And so maybe that's more of like a marriage pessimism. I do still think heterosexual marriage benefits men much more than it quote unquote benefits women. Now, obviously the point of it is love and partnership, and you shouldn't be keeping score. But people always say you couldn't keep you shouldn't be keeping score because they would lose. And so I sometimes do keep score just so I know that I'm in the winning column. And yeah, I think women are still societally asked to do a lot more than men and given a lot less to do it with.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Don't want to.
Yeah, and don't want to. There's so many things that, and again, I'm going to say this. I lucked out with my husband. He really does want to do a better job than the expectations of men. Yes. And he does. Like 90% of the time, he does a mm-hmm. great job. The other 10% of the time, I'm like, flames mm-hmm. shooting out of my head. But he does try, and he does a really good job. But here's like an example of him doing something that I was like, oh my God, this is such a relief. I don't like planning fucking kids' parties. I don't like it. It is not, I don't have very good executive function. I'm not one of those people that like enjoy. My sister-in-law is so good at planning parties. Every party that she's ever planned is just so cute and perfect. And like, I love that for her. I love that for her. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. And so as a result, our 2-year-old did not get a first birthday party because I was like, I'm not planning it. I just kind mm-hmm. of.
Whatever. The pictures looked good.
Well, that she got a first. She didn't get a first birthday party. She just had like a tiny little like family thing with cake or whatever. But she didn't know the difference. She was one.
Yeah.
But this time when she was about to turn 2, my husband like really took the lead. I was like, we kind of both were like playing chicken because he doesn't like to plan things either. And he took the lead and actually was like, okay, I'll figure this out. And he figured it out. He figured out Freak. A little, yeah, like he got all the wheels turning. I had to pick up some supplies. It was truly a team effort, but I didn't have to do the part of it that I hate the most. And he just like made it happen. And I realized that the expectation is on you. You don't realize before you get married as a hetero woman how much programming that your husband has had from society at large or from his own house. And my in-laws are also really, really nice and a cool couple. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they're like crappy, but mm-hmm. you just absorb, like men just absorb things mm-hmm. and absorb expectations. And I think that young women get married and it's like, wait, what do I have to do?
Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of times too when it comes to children, because I think girls are socialized to take care of children. Like when I gave birth, I had changed 1,000 diapers in my life because I'd been a nanny. I'd been mm-hmm. a babysitter. I helped with my nieces and nephews. I had changed diapers. It was not a new skill. And when our first son was born, CJ, who is, again, exemplary. We're putting all three of our husbands, like, up on an altar that you can't even touch. He was like, I've never changed a diaper. And it's like, that's not even his fault. He's just simply never been asked to change a diaper.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's real. I noticed that, too. There were certain things with parenting that I would get frustrated with, where it was like, we've been parents for the exact same amount of time. Mm-hmm. Why do I know right. how to do this thing? Like, why? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like having a job and you both have the same start date. It's like, why do I know how to do this and you don't? And examining that, it's like, oh, yeah, because I was asked to do it. I know Josh had definitely changed diapers because he's got his youngest sibling is like 10 or 11 years younger than him. So he's definitely changed diapers before. But it was like, yeah, there are things that we just were taught. Like little girls are given baby dolls to play with right. and things to take care of. And little boys are given like predator toys and dinosaur action figures. And they're kind of instructed to like create mayhem and destroy things. And that's like not entirely their fault. But it definitely, when you get into a relationship with somebody who lacks skills that you have had drilled into you for your entire life, it mm-hmm. it can be a little bit of a tough. I mean, do you think Gen Z women are like the most heteropessimistic part of society? Do you think that they're more heteropessimistic because they're seeing millennial women kind of realize en masse what hetero relationships can do to them?
I mean,
I have to tell you, I feel like Gen X women, no one's talking to us. And yeah. I feel like that we may be more heteropessimistic in the following, mm-hmm. that like we have come to the point, everyone's starting to go through, is either starting perimenopause, is mm-hmm. through it, is menopausal. And I've learned so much about hormones, which you mothers learned much sooner than I did, which is that from the time I am 12 or 13, my hormones fluctuate. Therefore, every day my body is coping in some way, shape, or form with highs and lows. And then you start going through it and you realize you don't have to fucking cope anymore.
And that you don't, and I think it has made my tolerance for, if the education had not been, it's still way far behind where it should be. But the part of me that doesn't care anymore about certain things and doesn't put up with bullshit and doesn't have tolerance for dumb stuff, I embrace it now instead of feeling like I have to go back to this very fluid way that I was before. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's like, that's why I feel at 50 that there is not a fucking chance I would ever get married again and adapt to anybody. Like, there is no way. I am me. I am fine. I am perfect. I love my husband. And like, that's it. That's all she wrote for me. That's yeah. how I feel. Mm-hmm.
If something mm-hmm. ever happened to Josh, I would do the Ayesha Roscoe thing. Ayesha Roscoe, that NPR White House correspondent mm-hmm. or reporter, who decided to platonically co-parent with her best girlfriend.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Kate and Allie walked so everybody could run.
I would take many lovers. And I would go first to the World Cup and wonder who was available. But yeah, I would want independence in my household and then maybe a vibrator and like a roster of two.
See? There you go.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sani Petty. Hysteria is brought to you by Smart Credit. Here's something most people aren't told about their credit score. It's not just whether you pay your credit cards. It's when you pay them. Yeah, most yep. people didn't realize that. But Smart Credit, I didn't. But Smart Credit's data experts understand how credit bureaus operate. So they created something called Best Paydown Date, built around how credit reporting actually works.
So instead of guessing, you get a personalized strategy that shows you what to do and when to do it to help you maximize your score. And that matters because better credit can mean lower payments and more money in your pocket. And this is where it gets interesting. You can see your full credit picture in one place. Your score, what's affecting it, and if something needs attention, you can take care of it right there. So before you apply for anything, a car, apartment, refinance, it makes sense to start with Smart Credit. Go to smartcredit.com/hysteria and try it for just $1. You may be surprised to see how many points Smart Credit estimates you can gain. That's smartcredit.com/hysteria. Results vary. Cancel anytime.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for heteropessimists who nevertheless watch Love Island and can't figure out why. Before we get to Sani Petty, some announcements for the class. Guys, CrookedCon 2026 is happening November 5th to the 7th in Washington, D.C. It's going to be even bigger than last year. And I'm excited to say that we will be there. There will be more panels across bigger stages, candidate forums, live shows, interviews, organizing events, and tense but cathartic moments between prominent media figures who have yelled at each other on the internet. Friends of the pod subscribers get an exclusive discount on the all-day event on November 7th, in addition to many other perks that we can't wait to tell you about. There are 4 events total. Go to crookedcon.com to get your tickets for each and any of them, and we can't wait to see you there. All right, Alyssa, Sanity yes. Corner or Feeling Petty this week?
Sanity Corner.
Okay.
Are you ready? Have you yes. guys heard about the Nun podcast?
No.
Okay, you guys. So the Dominican Sisters have a podcast. It's called Dominican Sisters Open Mic. And they are just these lovely nuns who have a podcast. They were talking about hobbies the other day, and one of the nuns was like, I don't have time for a hobby. Hobby's just another thing on my to-do list. They talk about playing Ultimate Frisbee. I am currently in the middle of episode 15, which is Deep in the Heart of Siena, a sister's journey from Texas to Tuscany. You guys, if
okay.
you
eat, pray, love, nun style.
This is these ladies. First of all, the host, fucking 10 out of 10, no notes. She's great on mic. But I do not, again, things come up in my feed. I don't know where I found them. The other day it was like how to survive a nuclear holocaust. I was like, okay, I'm going to share it. This seems like a valuable PSA. But I have ended up with the nuns on my feed and I love them. I listen to them. They're not like when I'm going out for my morning walk. That's not what they're there for. They're okay. there for when I need to wind it down and I'm making dinner. And I'm like, okay. let's hear what the sisters are up to. I cannot recommend them. They're on video. You can watch them on YouTube. Like, if you need a palate cleanser, I cannot. It's because it's not like, I'm not a religious person. So I think that maybe that, maybe I love it that much because I'm not a religious person, but I love hearing what they're up to, how they ended up where they are, how they do what they do. It's just, I don't know. I love them. I love them. They're good vibes. They're not preachy. They're just good. Delightful.
Nuns are hetero pessimist.
Yes.
So they're sort of aspirational. Of just like, listen, they've got one man in their life and they're never going to meet him. Sounds great.
So anyway, that's it. You guys, I encourage everyone to give them a listen. They're super fun.
Okay.
Okay. I am feeling petty this week. This is so petty.
What?
But I feel like if you order Indian food or any like soupy, not uh-huh. soupy, but any sort of like saucy gravy-based,
I know where you're
Asian
going with
food,
this. Go.
It needs to come with rice. There needs
absolutely.
To, and it needs to be part mm-hmm. of it. And you can order it without rice for a discount, but it should just automatically come with rice.
I agree.
Because there are so many times when I have, I mean, my husband always makes sure, I'm talking about him a lot this week.
Wow. Love Josh.
I know. You guys all know him. He's kind of the rice master of our house. We've got a really good rice cooker.
You got me a most perfect rice cooker.
Oh, yeah. It's Japanese and it sings to you.
It sings.
Oh
yeah,
gosh.
It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it goes da-da-da-da-da. It's really cute. It does it when it's done. It's great. But I just – I hate the feeling of like get a takeout order. I get it home. I open it up. Mm-hmm. Fuck. Mm-hmm. Now I got to
totally.
Wait for the rice cooker mm-hmm. to make rice, which is fine, but I'm hungry now, you know?
Or yeah. on the menu, it should say, does not come with rice.
Rice not included.
Yeah.
Right.
I would go so far as to say when a delivery item does not make it to me, I don't simply want to just be refunded for that item. I would also like pain and suffering.
Yes.
Because if I believe macaroni and cheese is coming and then macaroni and cheese doesn't come, that's worse than $5.
Yeah.
Like that is yes. either send it to me still or you need to give me $10.
See, and for me, Megan, when I ordered an egg and cheese when I was in the city last time and it gets to the apartment and it has bacon on it and my husband doesn't eat pork, the recomp doesn't do anything. He doesn't have breakfast now. Like, he can't. I mean, I have two, but he has nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. This petty has evolved because I agree that a messed up delivery should come with more than just a refund. I don't want this
yes,
$5.
Because it's
I
not
want
the delivery person's fault either. They should not face your ire.
No.
Or not get their tip. Sorry.
Yeah. No. Clearly. Exactly. Because it's usually like it's somebody else. Somebody else messed up. But anyway. Okay. Megan, feeling petty or sanity corner?
A little bit of both. You guys have recommended Widow's Bay already.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Great. So that was going to be my Sani. So my petty is I saw Steven Spielberg's new film, Disclosure Day. It is so bad.
And really?
Oh my gosh, it is awful. And like my husband, CJ and I, we are not leaving the house together very often right now. We have two small children. We had to coordinate a babysitter, i.e. my mom, to watch our children. We had to go late on a Sunday evening when I could have been watching UFC and see this movie. And it was so bad that I was laughing. And it like almost crosses into sanity because it made me be like, oh, Steven Spielberg fails too. Like the greatest filmmaker of all time, who is Mr. Alien Man himself, made one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Oh my God. What was so bad about it?
I love the cast. I actually think Emily Blunt is good in it. It is so cheesy.
No.
Like it is at the spoiler. At the end, they wheel out an elderly alien.
Yes.
Like, it's like they bring Winston Churchill out, but he's an alien. And then he whispers something. And then the last line of the movie is Emily Blunt looking at the camera, relaying what the alien said to her. And she just starts and goes, listen.
Stop.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds bad.
So
okay.
sad.
I'll cross
really
that one
bad.
Off the list.
If you want to get high over Christmas and watch it with your family and laugh, I could recommend it for that.
Well, I mean, yeah. Close Encounters is still my mother's favorite movie.
Yeah.
She might like this.
But have you tried to watch E.T. recently?
I can. It gives me nightmares.
And
my dad, you guys, my dad took me to see, it was our first father-daughter movie. I was like 5 or 6 years old. He took me to see E.T. We went to Carvel for ice cream after for 3 months because my parents I went in to see if I could sleep with them, and they were like, you can sleep at the foot of the bed. And so I slept at the foot of the bed for like 3 months because E.T. in hospice was like a hard no for me.
Well, no. I have to say, I bawled. So, like, I rewatched it. I'm like, have I? Because when I was a kid, I remember being like, oh, that's it? Okay.
No, it's and now, like, heartbreaking.
It's so, mm-hmm. it's, ugh. They it feels manipulative. Yeah. It feels All right, on that note, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Megan Gailey, thank you so much for joining
Megan.
Us.
Thank you.
Yes, we love you so much. Listeners, hysteria@crooked.com is the email address to get in touch. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you so much for being my ride or die this and all weeks.
Aaron.
And there will be more Hysteria for you next week.
Look, you got a snort. You guys have to keep that in.
Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Caroline Reston, Claire Fogarty, Kendra James, Adrian Hill, Alyssa Mastromonaco, and me, Erin Ryan. Our team includes Matt DeGroat, Rachel Gajewski, Delon Villanueva, Claudia Sheng, Mia Kelman, Jay Banks, Charlotte Landis, and Jordan Cantor. Our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.